translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Both parties in that fight were extremely angry at heart, and in enmity they beat one another with swords, arrows, and varieties of other weapons. Purport. There were always two kinds of men in this universe, not only on this planet, but also in the higher planetary systems. All the kings dominating planets, like the sun and moon, also have enemies like Rahu. It is because of occasional attacks upon the sun and moon by Rahu that eclipses take place. The fighting between the demons and demigods is perpetual. It cannot be stopped unless intelligent persons from both sides take to Krishna consciousness. Om Ajnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyau Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So good morning and welcome to this morning's class entitled The Battle Between the Demigods and Demons. So far, in chapter 9, the Srimad Bhagavatam has revealed the wonderful pastimes of the churning of the ocean of milk and how Lord Krishna took the sides of his devotees, the demigods. Now, sometimes what happens is the demigods, because they are engaged in Krishna's pastimes, the demigods sometimes are influenced by the Yogamaya potency, as opposed to the Mahamaya potency. And under that impression, sometimes we assume the demigods to be in illusion, like ourselves, or bewildered. But two points to note. The very first point is that the demigods have manifested from Krishna's body. It's a very important point to note. They've expanded from his mind, such as the Krishna Yajurveda explains, that from various limbs of Krishna's body, the demigods manifested. And secondly, these celestials are so elevated that not us, but they made it to the books of the scriptures. So rather than our character and our life be so exemplary that Krishna himself feels that our life should be dictated in the scriptures, rather the celestials' lives are dictated in the scriptures. So it's very important to understand about the concept of being judgmental. Sometimes it's very easy to be judgmental towards Indra or Brahma, because apparently in Krishna's pastimes they turned against him. But this is not actually the case. The celestials are always under the protection of Lord Krishna, and Lord Krishna sometimes uses them to manifest either an instruction or a particular pastime. And therefore, within Chapter 9, Lord Krishna, he favors his devotees, the demigods, by appearing as the Mohini Murti form. And in that form, as we all know, the Lord tricked the Daityas and the Danavas, the sons of Diti. In fact, the Daityas and the Danavas are actually brothers of the celestials, of the demigods. They have the same father, Kashyapa. But how interesting that despite the same father, Kashyapa, who is amongst the Saptarishis, or the seven sages, the most senior sage, Kashyapa Rishi, in fact it is said that the entire universe, all of us, the animals, all types of living beings, have the one common father, and that is Kashyapa. So therefore in rituals, for example, when one is required to take an oath, they introduce themselves as the descendant of Kashyapa Rishi, called Kashyapa Gotra. So in this way, all of us are connected as brothers and sisters of Kashyapa. But directly, the celestials, as well as the Daityas, were directly brothers. Nevertheless, being brothers, the attitude was always like the Pandavas and the Kauravas. Enmity, full of enmity. And therefore, Mahamohini Murti, despite knowing that both of these two sides are brothers, she favored the demigods. The first verse that we are reciting from today, there is a specific word which is used. Vasudeva paran mukaha. So in the first verse, the Srimad Bhagavatam explains that because the demons were not devotees of Lord Vasudev, therefore they were not able to drink the nectar. Now the word Vasudeva paran mukaha also means a person who is turned away from the face of Krishna, or a person paranmukha who has turned away from the instructions of Krishna. So paranmukha is an important word to use, because the word paranmukha is being used to describe how a person is a non-devotee. So both Daityas as well as the celestials, they were both equally spiritual. It's very important to note. They were both equally religious. They were both equal in values and ethics. And how is that? You can understand from the ninth chapter, the previous chapter. When Mohini Murti appeared and she had made the agreement with the Daityas and the celestials to put them into lines and to feed them nectar, before doing so, many, many moments and days and hours were spent by the demons in bathing, in performing achaman, in wearing beautiful dhotis, in decorating their heads with tilak, and then after that, performing so many types of devotional practices, which included offering Krishna various oblations in the sacred fire, and then also offering Krishna various offerings. And the demigods also did that. And then the brahmanas came. And when the brahmanas came, the demons and the celestials offered the brahmanas charity. And they also extended the charity to the kshatriyas, vaishyas and shudras. So in this way you can see on how even the demons were experts at following the various rules and regulations. The very basic rules of etiquette and values and affection and submission and devotion, in fact, as well. And the ninth canto, the previous chapter, the ninth chapter, then goes on to describe that the demons, as well as the celestials, even faced the right direction. They faced east, and they sat on kusha grasses. And in that way, they waited for the pot of nectar to come. So they did their part to receive the nectar. They knew culture. They knew everything. However, the first verse of the 10th chapter explains, Vasudeva paran mukaha. However, they were not fixed at the feet of Krishna perpetually. They were not following his instructions regularly, and therefore they're called non-devotees. So through here, the first force that comes to mind is the aspect of being judgmental. That sometimes what happens is that even though people may come amongst our association and our temple and be of different philosophies or different types of practices, so it's important not to be judgmental, because it is the judgmental aspect that takes one away, despite being devotional, despite being dedicated to Krishna, as someone who is also a paranmukaha. Even being of the same guru, even being brothers and sisters, it's very easy to be very different from one another simply by turning away from the instructions of Krishna. And therefore, from this verse, we distinguish between who is a non-devotee and a devotee from one who turns away from the instructions of Krishna. It's very easy to worship the same God. It's very easy to be ritualistically observant to the same God, wearing the same type of clothing, the same type of practices. But what differentiates two people is wherein one of them, or either both of them, in a unusual situation, wherein they both follow the instructions of Krishna. The second verse explains on how after the Mohini Murti distributed the nectar, The Lord then went back to the spiritual world, being carried by Garuda. However, the demons, despite knowing that the celestials have now taken nectar, they still nevertheless became envious out of hatred for the Lord. And out of hatred for the Lord, they then decided to fight with the celestials, despite knowing that anyone who has drunk the nectar is literally immortal. And the Srimad Bhagavatam explains that the battle between the demigods and the celestials was so fierce that simply by hearing about it, the fifth verse explains, would make one's hair on one's body stand on end. Now, I won't spoil it for all of you here, but later on in this chapter, you'll see on how, in fact, the battle that took place between the demigods and demons was beyond belief. I mean, sometimes, maybe before becoming a devotional, you may have seen horror movies or other types of adventurous films. But when you read the next few verses, it really is something unbelievable. I mean, we have demons who, after being shattered, their ornaments falling off their body, literally their nails and their hairs being shaved off their heads by the weapons of the demigods, and in fact, even their heads falling off their body. Their trunks and their bodies were still fighting. Do you know how? The Bhagavatam explains, because the trunk and the body was fighting using the eyes of the head many miles away. That's how descriptive the fight was. And then when Indra began to destroy every weapon, because on one side we had Bali Maharaj, who was the Senapati of the demons, and on the other side we had Indra, who was the Senapati, the commander-in-chief of the demigods. Every time Bali Maharaj would shoot either the Shaktiban or other types of weapons, Indra would defeat every single weapon. And in fact, when Bali Maharaj invoked the Shaktiban is an extremely important and very deadly celestial weapon. It is the same weapon that made Lord Ram and Lakshman unconscious. It's so powerful. When it was thrown from the tunir or the quiver of Meghanath Indrajit, such a powerful weapon. Indra, knowing that the Shaktiban is so powerful, he destroyed it while it was in the hand of Bali. And that was what made Bali Maharaj extremely angry. And then Bali Maharaj, he became Antardhan, invincible, invisible. And having become invisible, then Bali Maharaj, he created, because he was a Mayavi, he had so much Shakti, he had so much power in the material arts of Tantra, the Black Tantra. He then created an entire mountain, many, 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 many miles long. And that mountain appeared throughout the assembly of the fighting celestials. They looked up. What's going on? There's no more people to fight with, and all we can see is a mountain. And suddenly from that mountain fell rhinoceroses, lions, tigers, tree trunks. Now, how do you fight things falling from a mountain? And then different demonesses and different ghastly forms of demons appeared. And the demigod became so bewildered. They did not know what was going on. Can you imagine being flooded, inundated by scorpions, spiders, and huge, huge demoniac elephants and animals? They were completely bewildered. And at that point, all of them came together and they meditated upon Lord Krishna, and Krishna appeared with Lakshmi on Garuda with eight hands, and he massacred. In fact, as soon as he appeared, as Chaitanya Charitamrita explains, Krishna Surya Sama Mayaha Antakar Jaha Krishna Taranai Mayara Adhikar, that Krishna is as powerful as the sun. Wherever he appears, there is no chance of darkness or Maya to be present. So as soon as Krishna appeared on the battlefield, the ocean, the shores, the beach, in fact, of the ocean of milk, the entire illusory energy, the entire mountain just disappeared. And at that point, then Lord Vishnu started massacring all of the heads, all of the chiefs of the demoniac forces. Anyway, you can read more detail a bit later on, but it's a fantastic episode. And therefore, when Shukdev Goswami explains, Roma Harshana, that the hairs of all of your bodies will stand on end, you'll realize why later on. as the description of that fight takes place. It was very, very ghastly. Prabhupada explains in the purports that in the universe there are always two kinds of men. And he describes how even in the higher planetary systems, all of the kings of the dominating planets, and he gives the example of Chandra and Surya, or the sun and the moon, also have enemies like Rahu. Now Rahu, Prabhupada explaining significantly, because in the previous chapter, it was because of Rahu that the demons have chosen to fight with the celestials, despite the celestials being the recipients of Amrita, or nectar. Rahu, as you have read and heard in the previous chapter, he sat right in the middle between Surya and the moon. Between Surya and the moon, Rahu sat right in the middle. And disguised as a demigod, Surya and Chandra, they detected that amongst our line of celestials, of demigods, there is one demon, Rahu. And when Surya and Chandra detected that, they informed Mohini. And when they informed Mohini, by that time that the message had got across to Mohini, the nectar had already entered the mouth, the face, the head, and in fact, the neck. And some of the nectar even entered the upper chest or the breasts of Rahu. And therefore Mohini, rather than taking her time to destroy Rahu, immediately assumed the form of Lord Vishnu, and with Sudarshan, she cut the head of Rahu. And when she cut the head of Rahu, the drops of blood which fell onto the grounds became onion and garlic. Which is why onion and garlic have amazing properties. Amazing properties. They're good for blood, good for heart. So many good properties, because that blood was mixed with nectar. However, for people who are aspiring on the sattvic, the sattvagun, the mode of goodness platform, they discard those two items. And Manu explains in Dharma Shastras, Lashunam Chaiva Babuksha Na Dvijamanva, that those who are twice born, the Vaishyas, Kshatriyas, and Brahmanas, who are aspiring to be devotees of Krishna and to follow his path, trying to be immersed in the mode of goodness, they do not eat these two items, owing to their impure origin, just like mushrooms as well. So it is not a matter of being health conscious; it's a matter of being Krishna conscious. Which is why there are alternatives to these items. And these alternatives of these items are offered to Krishna as bhoga. And we receive that as prasad. And thereby, we get the same benefits that these other impure items give benefits when they are consumed by those who are not aspiring to be twice born. Rahu, since time immemorial, he has always been the enemy of Surya and Chandra. And by sitting in between, you see, it's very important that every aspect of the Bhagavatam that explains, there are reasons behind it. And when Rahu sat in the middle of Surya and Chandra, that symbolized the forthcoming aspects that Prabhupada talks about called eclipses. And therefore, Rahu, Prabhupada explains, is the planet which attempts to swallow the sun and the moon during the solar and lunar eclipse. And by Rahu sitting in between them, we can understand the relationship between the three. And when the eclipse takes place, because of the predominance of Rahu's power to be able to swallow Surya and Chandra during both types of eclipses, therefore, at those times, within the culture of the Vedas, people avoid to see and avoid to look and avoid to associate with that type of energy. Now, you see, in our culture, because we are not raised in a country where people understand the emotion and the sentiment and they're not conscious of the subtle energies of the eclipses and very much ignorant of the verses of the Bhagavatam. For many people, the verses of the Bhagavatam are just verses, informative, and only the loving aspects where Krishna dances and plays is what's important. But no, actually everything is factual. Therefore, throughout India or the Arya Deshas, when eclipses take place, it's taken very seriously. The humans are actually working with the celestials. It is not that we are separate from them. The existence of us and the existence of other living beings is an accepted fact. And what goes on in ether, in the skies, in the universe, we communicate with and we have a relationship with and we accept them and we work along with them. It is not that we discard them. And therefore, so many things in the Vedic culture are being followed because of historical episodes, whether it is the seasoning of the lady or whether it's the eclipses of the sun and the moon. These do have effect. And even if one considers themselves to be a pure devotee, it doesn't mean that the Maya energy is not going to be around. It is going to be around. The difference is on how it affects us. And there are physical things that are customarily done as according to the scriptures that helps us to remain away from malefic energies. And therefore Rahu, because on that day he is so powerful that he can eclipse the sun and the moon during the relevant eclipse of the solar and the lunar, therefore devotees and those who are conscious of this pastime stay away. In fact, Brahmanas and Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, after receiving the Upanayana ceremony, the Yajnopavita, every morning, as they do their Sandhya or their Brahma Gayatri, those particular prayers are used to empower and assist Surya in his fight towards Rahu. And because, the scriptures explain, because of the morning Sandhya done by the Brahmanas, Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, it is only because of the Sandhya that Surya then gets the ability to recover from the fight with Rahu. Shri Shri Radha Gokulnanda Bhagwan ki jai, Sishtita Pashmanumam ki jai, Shri Gornitai ki jai. And it is said that if the Brahmanas, the Kshatriyas and the Vaishyas were to stop performing their morning Sandhya, then Surya will lose the war that he has with Rahu. So you can see again on how even people of this earth communicate with the celestials and they help each other. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes this. He says, by the cooperation between the demigods and humans, peace can prevail. And so much blessings and mercy through that relationship can come as a result. Rahu is also described to be the material energy. And Rahu, one of his symbols is that he tries his best to create light during darkness, during natural darkness. So when Surya goes down, Rahu comes up. And therefore, Rahu's influence is so predominant in the material world that aspects like electricity, light, criticism, pride, ego, these are the aspects that Rahu is represented by. So the use of artificial lights at night is the energy of Rahu. The malefic tendencies in our hearts as a result of associating with Rahu throughout our life, especially in contemporary days, is the quality of Rahu. And in fact, every day there are moments which are dedicated to Rahu, and they are called the Rahukal. And during the Rahukal, the particular hour or so during the day, which appears a few times, journeys, auspicious work are requested, are suggested not to begin. Because any aspects which begin during the Rahukal or the time of Rahu will become negative. So the point I'm trying to explain is because Srila Prabhupada talks about Rahu in the purport, I'm trying to describe some of the aspects of Rahu and how we can avoid that by being always in touch with the superior energy and trying our best to be as natural as possible. And in that nature, we then avoid whether it's the eclipses, whether it's our own tendencies, to be malefic, whether it's our regularity of associating with energies that symbolize Rahu, by minimizing these aspects, we can actually help ourselves to be more away from the malefic energy. And therefore this fight between Rahu, Surya and Moon symbolizes this entire philosophy that is followed as part of the Vedic culture. Within the ninth chapter, what's interesting is that the feminine energy is used in order to bewilder the masculine energy. And Lord Krishna generally always appears as a powerful man. And he appears as a powerful man so that he can deal with the demoniac energies and also enhance his pastimes and share those with the world. However, in this particular pastime, Krishna takes the form of a woman. Now, what's interesting is that because of the greatness, because of the great qualities that are feminine, therefore, those qualities can also have adverse effects. And it is therefore that sometimes we find in the scriptures that the woman or that the female gender is criticized. It is not because that the female gender is faulty. It's because that the female gender is all powerful. And therefore one with power can also, when misused, can become very dangerous. Therefore in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna Bhagavan, he attributes all of the qualities that everyone in the world aspire towards. Smriti, intelligence, medha, beauty, wisdom, vak, janarinam. Krishna explains that even fine speech, all of these things, knowledge, these are all feminine qualities. These are all qualities that are inherent in a female. Which is why Atri, one of the most greatest celestials, in his Dharma Shastra explains that therefore the female gender is always pure. It is always, that female gender is always powerful, always devotional by nature, Atri explains. But then why is it that sometimes in the Srimad Bhagavatam and other Vedic texts, women are disregarded as being Maya and extremely dangerous to associate with? In fact, you may remember, for those of you who are here, probably a week or two ago, that when the demons were attracted to the form of Mohini, Mohini said to the demons, "Why are you attracted to me? I'm just a prostitute." In fact, a woman like me, who is independent, is very dangerous. Because an independent woman desires, Krishna says this in the previous chapter, an independent woman desires new and new friends. And therefore, what's the point of making friendships with an independent woman? Because she is accustomed to having new friends. You will be cheated. You see, obviously, she said this in a jokingly form, jokingly matter. And saying it in a jokingly matter, rather than believing her, the demons became even more attracted to her. They became even more attracted to her. And they said, "Mohini, whatever you say, we will do. Whatever you say, we will do." And then Mohini said, "Okay, fine. You queue up, and whatever I do, good or bad, you will accept." But you see, equally, you find, even if we were to accept that the female gender is always criticized, let's just say, although it's not, if we turn to the masculine gender, they're always causing trouble. They're always causing trouble. You know, whether it's to Krishna, whether it's to the material world, the huge entourage of demons, they're all men. They're all men. So actually, when you weigh the two, if you stop focusing upon the exclusive verses that apparently criticize the female gender, you'll find that the masculine gender are not even equally at fault, but are more at fault. You see? So then we understand why is it that the female gender can be dangerous. Because they possess all of the best qualities. And when a female decides to manifest all of the best qualities in the correct way, there is no equality. Which is why
when a small brahmachari begins his Gurukul training, out of the three types of honorable people, the mother, the father, and the spiritual master, the first person who is the honorable person for the brahmachari is the mother. Matra Deva Bhava. Then Pitra Deva Bhava. Then Acharya Deva Bhava. That first, it is the mother who represents God in flesh, in the world. Then the father. Then the spiritual master. And then the guests. Those who turn up to your houses without a date. Without any time. Untimed. Atithi. Therefore you find that in the Srimad Bhagavatam, when Krishna took the form of Mohini, he manifested the most powerful form that bewildered both the demigods and the demons. And in that form, he came as a lady to show the greatness of that gender. And within the pastimes of Krishna, you find there was one particular female who enacted a pastime that actually illustrated that if there is anybody who can truly honor, if there is only anybody who can truly respect a female, it can only be Krishna. Even if a lady is surrounded by the most powerful of powerful men, even when they fail, for whatever reason, whether it's their ethics, their values, their morals, their vows, Krishna will be the one who is the only protector of females. And this story is in reference to the Draupadi Vastaharan. During the Raja Sabha, when Shakuni, through his cheat, had completely ruined Yudhishthira. Now Yudhishthira was not a bad person. Yudhishthira was very bad at games. He would always lose at games. That was his only problem. For those of you who may have played chess, or for those of you who may have played backgammon, or any other games, you know, you may be really intelligent, but you may just not be good at trying to work out where the horse goes, where the king goes, where the queen goes, where the pawns go, where whatever the knights go. Yudhishthira had that problem. He just wasn't good at games. He would never win a game. You know, generally, if you win games, you're considered to be really powerful and strong and charismatic. Yudhishthira was intellectually and morally grounded. Games was just not his play. So when Shakuni was committing Yudhishthira to stake upon stake upon stake, he said that, Yudhishthira, you have one thing left. Even though you have lost yourself, you have lost your brothers, you have one thing left. Panchali, Yagyaseni, Draupadi. Stake her. Now what's interesting is this point which Shakuni made was accepted by Yudhishthira. Why? Not because he believed Shakuni, but because Yudhishthira knew that if I was to accept what Shakuni says, then Bhishma, Drona, Karna, Duryodhana, even the son of Bharadwaj, such a powerful brahmana, Bharadwaj Rishi, the disciple of Valmiki, who was able to enter into the hearts of Sita and Ram, God themselves, and write the Ramayana, the disciple of Narada, who Brahma himself came towards, that Acharya Drona will become bewildered. Yudhishthira knew this. Therefore Yudhishthira accepted to stake Draupadi, because he knew that by staking Draupadi, the Kauravas will become bewildered. Because why? They will not know whether Draupadi is liable to become the slave of the Kauravas or not. Because for one who has already been stolen, they have no possessions to stake. And Yudhishthira had given himself up before he had given up Draupadi. Nevertheless, he went along. And then the very poor Pratikamin, what a sad life he had. Pratikamin was the assistant of Duryodhan, just a very basic Shudra, just a very basic laborer. He was taught by Duryodhan to bring Draupadi into the assembly. Now, Draupadi was clothed with just one item. Okay. And it's described in the Mahabharata that her navel was being shown. Now, again, because we don't live in the Vedic culture, or because we may not have been raised in the Vedic culture, there are various things that women and men do to give a message. So when the navel is uncovered, it means that woman is in season. Okay, which is why it's not actually fashionable to go around having your navels being shown. Okay. So Draupadi was standing with her navel uncovered with one piece of cloth. And Pratikamin, he was so embarrassed. He was so embarrassed. He had tears in his eyes. He was shaking, trying to say to Draupadi that Yudhishthir had staked you and you're now being asked to come. And what did Draupadi say? Go back, Pratikamin, and ask Yudhishthir, who did he stake first? Me or him? And then come back. Because even Draupadi knew. Everybody knew. You cannot stake a person if you have already been lost. And Yudhishthir accepted that. So many people criticize Yudhishthir. So many people criticize him. Even to this day, amongst devotees of Krishna and non-devotees of Krishna. But actually, it's completely wrong. Which is why Draupadi said this. Pratikamin went back. And Yudhishthir did not say anything. Duryodhan became so enraged. Go back. Tell her to come. Otherwise, she'll be dragged to the court. Pratikamin, he went onto the floor. Somehow or another, he made it to the Draupadi's palace. He came back saying, she won't come. She won't come. And that is when Karna, not Duryodhan, Karna was the one who said, drag that lady by her hair. Bring her amongst all of us here. Dusashan, go at once. And then Dusashan was the one who went to her. And Draupadi, she was so shocked. She was crying. She was bewildered. That she ran into the quarter of the other ladies, where Gandhari, Kunti, and all the other ladies were. She ran into there trying to protect herself. And Dusashan was so fast that he chased her. And before she crossed the boundary, like you have the boundary of the altar, before she crossed the boundary to get into the ladies' compartments, he dragged her. And when he dragged her, she resisted. But he was so strong that he dragged her all the way across the floor using her hair. Now, Draupadi had blue hair. Sometimes we have blonde hair, we have white hair, yeah, attractive brown hair. But nobody has blue hair. Draupadi had curly blue hair. Okay, she was actually called Krishna because her hair was blue. So some of those blue hairs fell onto the floor. She was being dragged. And when she appeared in the assembly, she was so embarrassed, she covered her face. And when she covered her face, she did not know what to do. She asked Bhishma. She said to my father-in-law, who staked me first? Bhishma actually said, even Bhishma's criticized. Bhishma said, I'm confused. I don't know what to do. Yudhishthir is a man of morals. He's Dharmaraj incarnate. But I don't understand who can be staked if you've already been lost. I'm just trying to work out in my brain what the correct answer is. And everybody else gave the same answer. You see what Yudhishthir did? He showed the weakness of every person in the Kauravas, by which Krishna will come and destroy every single person. Which is why during the Vanaparva, just accelerating quite very quickly, when the Pandavas were incognito and Krishna was about to go as a Shantidud, as a peace messenger, Draupadi said, but Krishna, going as a peace messenger, doesn't that mean that all of the offenses that the Kauravas made is just going to be wiped out and forgiven? Krishna said, don't worry. I promise to you that the earth will drink the blood of Bhishma, Drona, Ashwatthama, Kripacharya, Dronacharya, everybody, despite going as a messenger of peace. So going back again to the Raja Sabha, when Draupadi saw that Bhim, he became so angry with Yudhishthir, he said to Sahadev, bring me fire. He said this in front of everybody. Bring me fire so I can burn the hands of Yudhishthir. Arjun stood up and said, Bhim, calm down. This is exactly what the Kauravas want us to do. The Kauravas want us to fight amongst each other. Don't give in. And Bhim calmed down. Draupadi then noticed that Dusashan was disrobing her. Draupadi did not know what to do. Bhishma, Drona, everybody were just sitting there with their heads down. Even Vidur could not do anything. The greatest of all men, Bhim, Arjun, Nakul, Sahadev, and Yudhishthir, was seated. She had the most powerful of powerful protections that can ever be given to any lady in all of creation. But every single one of them fouled. At that point, Draupadi, as she was being disrobed, it said she brought to mind Hari and Krishna. And she said three verses. She said three verses. That is three verses I haven't read anywhere. Somehow or another, by Krishna's mercy, last night I managed to find the manuscript, the palm leaf, out of tens of thousands of palm leaves that had the three prayers that Draupadi said. Now the reason why these three prayers are so powerful is because when Krishna heard these three prayers, he done something which he's never ever done. He was lying on his bed, the Shayya. And while lying on the bed, he stood up like lightning. And when Krishna stood up like lightning, it is said in the Sanskrit, Padayo. He ran. He ran from Dwarika, barefoot. Now Krishna's paraphernalia are all people. His feet are demigods waiting to enter into, waiting for Krishna's feet to enter into them. Krishna kicked his shoes and he ran barefoot. People were shocked. How can Krishna, the king of Dwarika, run barefoot? I mean, we may not understand this in our culture, but for a king to run barefoot, it's extremely bad. It's extremely bad. That cannot be done, okay? Without the umbrella, the chariot. Krishna ran all the way from Dwarika, barefooted. And he ran. He ran so fast that he managed to appear in his beautiful form, barefooted. His top cloth fell off. He was nearly naked. All he had was his dhoti, and his dhoti was a really bad brahmachari dhoti. It was hanging up with his anklet showing and his knees showing. His orange dhoti became black, just like his bodily complexion. Krishna ran so fast, and he appeared in Hastinapur. These three prayers I would like us all to chant together. Are you ready? Everybody, please respond. Draupadi said the following words. Govinda, Dwarika Vasin, Krishna Gopi Jana Priya, Gauravai Pari, Mutam Mam, Kimna Janasi Keshava. She prayed, Krishna, Keshava, with beautiful hair. My hair has just been dragged. Don't you know what's happening to me? I am perpetually being persecuted by the Kauravas. Oh, dear one of the gopis, O Lord of Dwarika, Govinda, please respond. He Nata, Hare Manata, Vrajanata, Artinashana, Gaurava, Arnavam, Agnam, Mam Udha, Aswa, Janardhana. My dear Lord, O Hare, O Lord of Lakshmi, Ma, Vrajanat, O Lord of Vrindavan, Artinashana, the destroyer of all afflictions. I'm in a boat of the Kauravas. I'm in a ship of the Kauravas. And please protect me from being sunken. The last verse, please respond. Krishna Krishna Mahayogin, Vishwatman, Vishwamavane, Prapannam, Pahi Govinda, Guru Madhya, Vasidatim. She says, Krishna, Krishna, the most greatest of yogis. Why did she use the word yogi? Because Krishna could perform all mystics. She required, what do you call it? She required something magic to be done. A miracle. She wanted a miracle. Therefore, Krishna, Krishna, Mahayogin. The Lord of the universe, Vishwatman, Prapannam, Pahi, 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 Govinda. I'm surrendering to you, Govinda. Guru Madhya, amongst these gurus, I'm losing my head. She says, Vasidatim, I'm losing my senses. I don't know what's going on. I'm being disobeyed in the presence of my husband, my father-in-law, the most powerful of all men. I have been completely let down by men. Completely let down by men. And therefore, I have no protection, Govinda, apart from you. O Gopi Janava Priya. And then when Krishna heard these three verses, that's when he ran towards Draupadi. I think, considering the state of the world, in our homes, in the community, in society, I think these three verses should be memorized by every lady. It will be your only protection. Despite the most powerful and powerful of men that may be around. Because the protector of women, such a powerful race, is only Gopi Jana Priya, the Lord of the Gopis. And when Draupadi said this, Krishna did. And when Krishna appeared, it was amazing. Krishna appeared with Vishnu, he appeared with Hari, and he appeared with Nara, and he appeared with Dharma. Now recently somebody criticized this. You see, actually, in the name of being a scholar, sometimes what happens is we think we're better than, of course, each other, and we're better than the books as well. And sometimes what happens is people, they try to say that this Draupadi Vastaran didn't happen. It's sad, because it is this chapter that shows the greatness of females. And if it didn't happen, then what are we going to learn? It's better to accept the scriptures as it is and try to work around Krishna rather than Krishna work around that. It's a common thing, actually, you'd realize. If you think really carefully, it's really, really common to try to get Krishna to work around us rather than we work around Krishna. So you see what happened was when Krishna appeared, he saw the situation and he thought, maybe I should just make myself invisible. So Krishna made himself invisible. And Krishna then, because he appeared with Nara, Vishnu, Hari and Dharma, he got Dharma to clothe Draupadi. Krishna got Dharma to clothe Draupadi. Which is why some scholars who may say that you never read about Krishna saving Draupadi in the Bhagavatam through giving cloth, or you never read about Krishna saving Draupadi in other scriptures. It's because he did so indirectly. Dharma was the person, the Mahabharata explains, by Vyasa, who came and he gave different colored cloths over Draupadi. Why? Because the Vedas say, everyone please respond, Dharma Rakshati Rakshitaha. One who protects Dharma, Dharma protects that person. Therefore, Dharma came and he protected Draupadi. And he was the person who gave cloth upon cloth upon cloth to Draupadi. Of course, Krishna did so. And therefore, Draupadi later on, she's always saying in the Mahabharata, Krishna, you came and protected me when I was being disrobed. And when this happened, everybody was shocked. Everybody knew that the sweet flute of Krishna is being played. And therefore, Draupadi's disrobing is being protected. And Krishna came and he saved her. So I wanted to draw a parallel between the Mohini avatar, which shows the greatness of that gender to save the day. Because what is Amrita? As in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains, Tapamyaham aham varsham nigrahami utsrajami cha amritash chaiva mrityuscha sarasaj chaham arjuna. How Arjun, I give rain, I give sun. Nigrahami utsrajami cha, I give the seasons. Amritash, I give nectar and death. Sadasaj chaham arjuna, I am truth and untruth. So this amrita which was given to the celestials is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita in the 9th chapter, in the most confidential knowledge. And therefore, Mohini had to appear to properly distribute the nectar. So I wanted to draw a parallel between the Mohini Murti form, which really saved the universe. She really saved the universe. It wasn't a masculine avatar. And then I wanted to show how Draupadi, the only person that could really have protected Draupadi, despite being in the most powerful or powerful situations that any lady could ever have. Talk about protection. Who could have more protection than Draupadi? She was born from Yajna. She had Drishtadyumna, who was also born from Yajna. She had the Pandavas. In fact, when Krishna came to meet Draupadi during the time when they were incognito in the forest, Draupadi said to Krishna, there are four reasons why I deserve to be protected by you. There are four reasons only why Draupadi deserves to be protected by Krishna. Draupadi said, because of our relationship. They were cousins. Okay? They were cousins. Because Krishna and Pandavas were cousins. Second reason, Draupadi said to Krishna, because the respect you have for me. Krishna, he had so much respect for Draupadi. Third reason, the most beautiful reason, Draupadi says, because of our friendship. Krishna and Draupadi were friends, despite being sister and brother-in-law. And fourth reason, the most devotional reason, because of your lordship over me. Our relationship, the respect you bear for me, our friendship, and the lordship you have over me, Krishna. For these four reasons, I deserve to be protected. I'm always protected, and you'll always protect me. And Krishna actually said in response to these four words to Draupadi, he said that the earth may change, the earth may fall off its axis, the stars may stop coming out in the night, but my word will never be vain. The earth will drink the blood of all those people that dared to touch and humiliate you. And in this way, Krishna again and again and again shows that, please forgive me, but putting a man aside, okay, that when a female becomes devoted to Krishna, she can become of the exact same priya, the exact same dear relationship that Draupadi had with Krishna, she can also have. And Krishna has this special, very, very special favoritism to mothers, ladies, and women. And Draupadi will forever, in the history of the scriptures of the universe, be the example of the greatness of devotion and how Krishna can come and protect despite having all protection at those worst times when those protections fail upon them. Thank you very much. I'm sorry, I've run out of time, 15 minutes. I apologize. Is there any comments or any questions that anybody has?